the challenge for us and the opportunities it creates for us in foreign policy is to remind people that there is opportunity in the way the United States has traditionally seen the international system. By greater cooperation with the North Atlantic states, we've done a lot of things through NATO, with greater opportunity and investments in trade across the Atlantic. We've sold a lot of products from right here in Indiana, right in Minnesota where I'm from, and we ought to maintain our focus on trade. And then third is making sure that we're keeping up with developments in the economy and making sure that workers have the skills they need to succeed in those new economies. I think part of the rise of these more conservative parties has a lot to do with the fact that workers increasingly feel that they don't have access to the same kind of jobs and growth and opportunity that they did before, that their parents did, and worry even more about the opportunities their kids may have. So we got to get back to focusing on what works, focusing on education, focusing on opportunity. And if we do that, I'm pretty confident we'll be back to the kind of cooperative arrangements with our European allies that we've seen, you know, in the decades since World War II.
You talk about, I guess, to paraphrase what you just said about having a fair shake, for lack of a better way of putting it. And part of the problem, one of the antecedents of the rise in global populism has been automation and artificial intelligence and workers feeling like they're being displaced both here and abroad. Is there something we can do or should do to close the gap between winners and losers in an emerging economy like that?
Yeah, so I think there's two separate questions. One is we've seen remarkable changes in inequality in this country, even in my period of consciousness, you know, the last three or four decades. We just can't continue that. There's a risk that if we don't handle this innovation correctly, that it will only increase the inequality between the haves and the have-nots, because so many of these investments in new technology require big capital investments. Right now, a relatively smaller part of the population is in a position to make investments in those big new automation and artificial intelligence technologies. So we have to be mindful about that. I hope we see some discussion about this in the tax debate that's happening in Washington this fall. There's been already some discussion of this, and the idea that we have to make sure that there's some tax relief for middle-income families. The second thing relates to what can we do about workers getting their fair shot? And we have to do a better job of making sure that when people finish high school, they have skills that are useful, that workers who have found themselves mid-career, pushed out of the jobs that they had been in for the previous 10, 15 years, have opportunities to easily retrain and find new, not only new skills, but new skills that are applied to some actual jobs. And so we're doing a lot of work, for example, with the Marco Foundation, focusing on ensuring that among employers, workers, and educators, there's more transparency about the skills that companies need, the schools where workers can get those skills, and then jobs for the workers who have the skills. If we can square that circle, then, again, the United States, because of our great investments in innovation and because of the capabilities of our workforce, will be in a position to take advantage of this revolutionary time period. If we're not focused on this, if we just focus on one part of the equation, just technology or just the workers, we'll miss the opportunity. If we focus on both together, then the sky's the limit.
Another change we've witnessed in recent years is one that's also likely to become more prevalent in the future, and that is the growth of cyber weapons or technology to achieve strategic aims. Stuxnet is an example of that. Russia's use of social media sites, Facebook, Twitter, whatever the case may be, to influence or try to influence the 2016 presidential election. What does that changing nature of conflict portend for the future?
I think you put your finger on one of the major challenges we face as a country, which is, as a country more reliant on the internet than anyone, and as a country that's been able to see great growths in employment and opportunity as a result of the internet, we may be particularly vulnerable to somebody trying to hack, somebody trying to misuse the internet, somebody trying to peddle misleading disinformation, as they did, we now know, in the election last year with the Russian involvement. The challenge for us is to make sure that we recognize that this is happening. We can no longer pretend that this is not a threat. So one, increase our awareness. Two is, as consumers of this information, we have to be more discerning. Sometimes when something seems too good to be true, it is. And we cannot allow ourselves to be misled with false information. We cannot allow ourselves to propagate false information. That's a hard, a high hill to climb. But if we are more discerning consumers, then we'll be okay. It's when we allow ourselves to be misled, when we make ourselves vulnerable on the internet, that we're going to run into problems.
I suspect you were in the room during some conversations with President Obama when he was facing the issue of how much he should divulge about what was already known about potential Russian influence in the last election. He was in a pretty unenviable spot. He couldn't put his thumb on the scale and tilt it one way or the other. Do you think he handled that as best as could be possibly handled?
I think he did. And I think that that's true, by the way, of a lot of things for the president, no matter who he is. You find yourself in an unenviable position of choosing between difficult outcomes. In this instance, he made very clear that we want to protect the integrity of the election. He communicated very clearly to the Russians that we would not tolerate them influencing the outcome of our elections. And as a result, I believe, of those very clear communications from the president to President Putin, some of the things we feared would happen did not happen. In retrospect, I think he did exactly what we needed to do to protect the integrity of the election. Nobody questions whether President Trump was freely elected. That's an important outcome that was in doubt, in our view, at various times last summer, or as I say, in the summer of 2016. And it's important that the president stuck to his guns to ensure that it happened the way it did.
Following the 2014 midterm elections, President Obama started to use aggressive executive action to implement things like the Paris Climate Accord, the Clean Powers Plan, the DACA program. President Trump has subsequently used executive powers to roll back a lot of those policies, and I'm wondering if you still think executive action was the best way to proceed on those things.
I think that is very important, for example, on the Clean Power Plan, which in very important ways remains the law, the practice of the land, that the president recognized that we could not wait for further action because the impacts of climate change are so dramatic. And because, by the way, the returns to American taxpayers of modernizing and reforming how we generate the electricity in this country are so important. So the Clean Power Plan, I think we stand by that. The decisions on DACA, this continues to be debated, but even President Trump now says that he thinks that the DACA recipients should stay in the country. And then questions around other issues. When you're president of the United States, you don't often get a chance to choose to wait. You're elected to act to address areas of critical national security for the country, national interest for the country, and that's what the president did, including after the midterms in 2014. I think history will judge him as having been on the right side of those issues. I stand by the decisions we make. I know he does. We'll let the historians sort that out over time. But there's no doubt that he did take on big, pressing, difficult issues for the country. And that's why we elect presidents, to take on big, tough, difficult issues.
President Obama always struck me as kind of an optimist. You strike me as somewhat of an optimist. Are all challenges surmountable?
When I look at the history of this country, I've not seen one that fair-minded Americans working together weren't able to overcome. And that gives me reason to be very hopeful about us as the next generation of those Americans to do the same. It's when we lose sight of the fact that we're all in this together, that we're all Americans that need to resolve these problems together, and that all of our kids will benefit or pay the price if we don't resolve these problems together. That's when we get into problems. But when you take a cue from, you walk around here and you see pictures of Father Ted with Dr. King, one would have thought that was an insurmountable set of problems. But those two together did some pretty remarkable things. There's no reason why Republicans and Democrats today can't get together and start working on some of these issues together instead of demonizing one another or continuing to talk about issues. We should start doing some stuff.
Final question. You were the chief of staff for nearly 4 years, I believe a month short of 4 years. John Kelly's been in it a couple of months. What advice would you give to him to do the job correctly?
I think the best piece of advice is that you have to, in that job, tell the president not what he wants to hear, but what he needs to hear. And I know John Kelly a little bit, and I'm pretty sure that that Marine is telling the president what he needs to hear, not just what he wants to hear. So I wish John luck, and it's a difficult job, but he's more than up to the challenge.
Would you like to work in a White House situation that seemed to have, for lack of a better word, not the best message discipline?
I would say that I'm really happy with my opportunity to work right here at Notre Dame at the Keough School right now. So that's one of the things I'll focus on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.